it's time to go out and...
Rama Nightclub at the end of the world. Yeah, this is definitely a day to breathe. It's a good day for me. It's good to be back with you all tonight. This is going to be... This is a show that I'm doing for myself, but in the stories that I'm going to tell you tonight, I think there are some lessons for us all about how we adjust and adapt to what's coming in front of us. And the world's still doing what it's doing. I mean, as of Thursday of this week, I have resigned officially, completely and totally from CollapseNet. I've given back 35% of the 55% of the stock. I hold 20%. But I'm not going to take any more income from the company, and the company is now 100% owned by the people who made it, and it's being run by them, and they're doing very well. The story of how I got there, I think, is really relevant for all of us now, because on the one hand, if you look at the World News Desk at CollapseNet, you know how quickly things are deteriorating around the world. And even more so, maybe you have joined me in the conclusion that I reached about 2 months ago, that a number of crises were so far out of control that the outcome was no longer in doubt. And that's the case. I mean, about the only notable thing I noticed today was that with the riots all over Europe, Italy is considering calling out the military to quell the riots. That makes it sound more like a revolution. But that's all happening out there. And I had been laboring for a long time with the work that I was doing, 7 days a week to read all those stories. And being very tired of it, and what I realized was the point of diminishing marginal returns had been reached. There wasn't much benefit for me reading all the stories and doing all that work every day, because we weren't getting that much more out of it. Now, on the other hand, with all of that happening, there was a series of situations, crises, if you will, events that were pressuring, that were putting an enormous amount of pressure on it. It seemed like there was no way out. And how many times will we say that in the future? As we look at events around us in the world and think that there is no way out. And I guess one of my life lessons is that always when you see no way out, it's at the level of consciousness that you're at, there are no ways out. And the answer is to change your state of consciousness. And so in the events of what happened this week, as I let go of CollapseNet and realized that was absolutely the thing to do, it's working out great for everybody, I remembered that it was about letting go, but I also remembered something else, and this is what I think is really important for us as we get deeper into these very troubled days, prophetic days, if you choose to look at it that way. I had the opportunity to do something right that I wasn't able to do in 2006. And this is all about the letting go part, but also one of the great lessons that I've learned, because I cannot separate spirituality I mean events that happen in my life that are explainable no other way, keeping me on this path focused and allowing me to be reasonably successful after all these years, that was spirit, there's no doubt about it. I'm going to be talking about that. I think I'm going to be writing another book. But one of the lessons I've learned along a spiritual path is that sometimes you're given an opportunity to do something over again, kind of like a do-over, but in a different way, and to have a happy outcome. And in 2006, it had been, I was dog tired of reading the stories every day in 2006, but we were smoking it from the wilderness. We were nailing the Bush-Cheney administration with exposés. The Pat Tillman cover-up had just fallen into our lap. Stan Goff was, and I were pouring through the papers, and I was blistering. And of course, the Tillman, the seven-part Tillman series, became the foundation of Henry Waxman's hearings in the House Governmental Affairs Committee that resulted in the disciplining of three general officers, six senior officers, and eventually the I quit of Donald Rumsfeld, for which I paid some serious prices. 2006 was the year in which my computers were smashed, in which I was set up on sexual harassment charges. And it took until about 2009, I think, or 8, before we had it all pieced together, that the Ashland Police Department had willingly falsified their own police report. They then had illegally leaked it to a newspaper editor, Scott Bolsinger at the Ashland Daily Tidings, who wrote published several slam pieces on me. They admitted that they illegally leaked that to him, and which was unusual because Bolsinger was arrested about a year later for having sex with a minor and defrauding half the town. I know who smashed the computers. It was my employees, Zach and Ryan, and so all of that was used over the course of several years to try and trash me, especially in terms of the movie. But what I had wanted to do in 2006 desperately was to leave From the Wilderness to the people who had made From the Wilderness great. And here I'm talking about Carolyn Baker was there then. She took over as managing editor when I went to Venezuela to keep that Tillman series alive. Jenna Orkin was there, but people like Michael Caine, who had just done some amazingly courageous journalism for us at From the Wilderness, Jamie Hecht, all the people who had made FTW so great and they put their heart and soul into it, just exactly like the people did at CollapseNet. But I did not get to turn that company over. That company was run into the ground. And when I left the country, and these people took it over and looted it. And in 2007, when I came into an inheritance, I went back around to everybody and paid them everything that they didn't get. But there was no company to leave them. And that was a big sadness for me. But now CollapseNet, as of this week, with the way the crises played out, we had a major health issue from one of our founding members who's hanging in there. We had financial issues, and it became clear that the option was for me to let go, and that would solve the problem. But the net result, if you go look at the CollapseNet page, they've got a founder's corner up there. And there's my video and my statement of resigning, but the comments clearly told me something that was most gratifying, and I think it speaks also to the audience that we have on this show, which is very important to me. You understand and you resonate with the spiritual choices, because from one standpoint, there's a very clear case that could be made to say that the situation on planet Earth is beyond human aid. That at the human level, the level of science and technology, the level of ones and zeros, there are no solutions for this problem. Now, in a spiritual path, Anthony de Mello, the Catholic Jesuit, once said, you come to a point where you either go stark, raving, insane, commit suicide, or become a mystic. When a human being, an individual human being, or collectively, a species, all of us, reach that point, it's called the bottom, where there are no more options, no more answers, no more negotiations. It's a place of complete surrender to the situation, which is exactly what I'm feeling tonight, and with a great deal of relief. At the point of surrender comes access to another power, some other kind of power, and it happens. This power, it doesn't make any difference whether it has a name or not, whether you call it a religion, whether you call it, you know, it doesn't make any difference at all. The fact is that it's like electricity. It's available, and if you follow certain steps, as in taking a plug, plugging it into the wall socket, and turning the switch, you get electricity. And in a sense, there are steps that can be taken on a spiritual path which work the same way. But the other thing that I have seen throughout the course of a lifetime here of, you know, 35 years of this, is that human beings have a tendency, when things get really, really dark, stressed, pressured, their mind closes. It closes like from a wide angle down to this very little tiny focus dot, and you have this tunnel vision. And one of the most common things that people do, and I've heard this over and over again as I speak and everything else, and I have done radio interviews, you hear people lock in on a set of conditions like, well, I don't have enough toilet paper, or I don't have enough, or you lock into conditions about the way things are on a given day, and you project that the future is always going to be that way. And that's a consciousness thing that makes it hard for you to see other solutions and other options. And the idea is to get out of that. And I had been in that mode of reading those stories or working from that part of my brain really for 35 years. And the reason that was so important to me was way back when in 1979 when I resigned from LAPD after I had death threats, it became clear to me that once I had moved out into that area of whistleblowing, I had number one, I had to go public and stay public forever. But number two, I couldn't afford to make a single left brain mistake. Everything had to be, because the only way you could get government officials or media to listen to you was to just be absolutely hardcore documented to the nth degree. And that became my operating theme for way too long. That's where I had to put aside things like music and everything else. I just had to live totally in that part of my head. And I did that because I felt that I felt and I believed that, and it was my mission to carry a message, to give a warning, to tell people as best as I could, starting off, hey, CIA's stealing drugs, and this means everything in the government screwed up, all the way through to the collapse of human industrial civilization. My job has been to warn and to carry a message clearly. And with honor, and I've been able to do that. But what I have received real clearly as a result of the events at CollapseNet this week, which I repeat, everybody is just happy. It turned out to be a win-win-win for everybody. You can go from hopeless to okay to hopeful, all as a result of working on your head. Now, where I'm going now, first of all, is I'm just enjoying the fact that for the first time since I can remember, I'm not getting up and reading all the stories every day. I think I want to be writing a book, though I don't think I am going to be writing another book. But next Monday, early morning, I'm driving down to Los Angeles. I'm going to be back on Joe Rogan. See my buddy Joe Rogan on Tuesday. We're going to do 3 hours from his studio in Pasadena, California, and we're going to figure some shit out is what we're going to do, and we're going to talk about all this at a much deeper level. But Thursday was my last day as CEO of CollapseNet, and Friday was just an unbelievable day of contrast. I got asked to speak, get this, at a Rotary Club. Oh my God, a Rotary Club. Okay, so and it was cool, and you know it was nice, but they're a little on the Republican side. They're a little on the and nice people, but I think probably the first inkling that anybody there got that this was not going to be a regular speaker at the Rotary Club was when I refused to pledge allegiance to the flag. And I got up, and there were bankers, and it was an awards day. So, you know, there was a lot of the business notables from town, and only a few had seen the movie. So we go through some slides about Rubicon and confronting Collapse and the movie Collapse and all of this. And it's amazing. They live in the same part of West County that I do, yet they have no clue as even to what's going on here or what's going on in the world, but everybody got silent. Nobody, it's like you could have heard a pin drop for the 30 minutes I was speaking. The Rotary Club. And then I went back home after that lunch going, well, I sure rattled some cages there. I sold a few books. And then I changed clothes, and I drove down to San Francisco, thanks to my friend Alan, who had given me a wonderful belated birthday gift, which was ticket in a box seat at the AT&T Park in San Francisco to see Roger Waters performing The Wall. Yeah, it couldn't have been better timing, and I love it when things like that happen. That was an amazing experience. It's an amazing show. And The Wall is supernaturally relevant after, 35 years, 40 years, I don't know how long. And where were people responding to that? And that's a very good sign. So we're going to come up on a song tonight, and I've played Diane Patterson several times on this show. And I just heard from her recently. She's actually back in the area here in Sebastopol. And we had dinner this week and had a great time with her. She's just an amazing talent. But she said to say thank you very much as a result of the plays on this show. She's getting some decent album sales, and she ought to be, because she's just amazing. And I'm playing this song again tonight because, as I said in my resignation from CollapseNet, now I am free to broaden my spiritual understanding of and approach to these times, because I'm very well convinced that from the intellectual standpoint alone, there aren't going to be many answers to be found, and we have to look in our hearts. So this is the song that absolutely tells you where I'm coming from tonight. After we get done with the song, the bottom of the hours, anything you want to talk about, if you got questions, feel free. You can call in at 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. We'll come with that. We're on PRN-FM, and here is Diane Patterson with High Sierra Moyne.
Time.
Diane Patterson. The song is High Sierra Morning. You can find her at dianepatterson.org. I love that song, and I would like to dedicate that after the fact to everybody who worked at and made From the Wilderness the great publication that it was. In the transition of CollapseNet, I think a lot of that history has been redeemed as well. And that's, I guess, one of the important points here is that as we go down this path towards collapse and the transition and hopefully the arrival of the 100th monkey and a complete and dramatic change in human consciousness, it's good to have opportunities to go back and clean up parts of your life, clean up house, to rid yourself of baggage that might be in there that's about things that you didn't do or couldn't have done, just to set something right. And sometimes that's maybe the most important thing you can do when you can't do anything else, is just to set something right. And when all else fails, you help somebody else. But it's a great relief for me. And now somebody called in while we were playing the song and asked if I was going to be, now that I've resigned as CEO of CollapseNet, will I be touring the country? I don't think so, but you know, I'm open. It depends. I will go if a special speaking engagement comes up. I'll go. I've been asked to speak at an amazing heirloom seed festival here in Petaluma, which is a big event later on this year. I'm doing that, but I'm going back down to LA to do Rogan and to meet with some friends and talk about options. But I really think that what I'm going to be settling into now is really intense focus on the land here, on the crops that we want to raise this year to get ready for the winter. And there's a lot of work on the land. I'm almost finished weed whacking 2.5 acres. And there are, you know, crops, and there's a lot of chores. This is the growing season now, so it's busy. I'm going to be doing that, I think, in writing. And then I'll deal with the rest as it arises. And it's like I've said for a long, long time, what you do, it's not a plan that you need. You need options. And having options is a good thing. And being freer to face this stuff is good. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Again, if you got anything you want to talk about tonight, lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. or 1-888-874-4888. This is Michael Rupert on the Lifeboat Hour at PRN-FM. We will be right back after these messages. White Trash, baby. Let's say a prayer for the new White Trash from our double CD, double wide. You can find out all of that, 37 originals, at newwhitetrash.com. Ryan, we have a caller on the line. Ryan from Seattle, are you there?
Hey, this is Ryan. Can you hear me, Mike?
I got you.
Man, hey, good to be on. First-time caller, but I wrote you a few months ago about how your advice helped with the snowstorm that happened out here and how I got to know my neighbors better. And I just wanted to call to thank you so much for framing the issues the way you do. That's made a lot of conversations happen that are really, really important conversations. It just helps me live with my neighbors better. And I just want to say thank you for all the work you've been doing.
Well, thank you very much. And on behalf of everybody at CollapseNet, I'll say thank you, too. Everybody there has worked exceptionally hard, and they're so dedicated to the mission, and I know they're going to do a bang up job at it. And it's always good to hear, to know that that what you've done has had some good results. And I really appreciate that call, man. Thank you.
Yep.
George in Miami, you there? George in Miami.
Hey, I appreciate you guys taking the call, and I'm a first time caller, and
I don't know what that is. Some feedback. George, I can't hear you. Okay, are we having a technical issue here? I don't know. George in Miami, are you still there? I don't know what happened. I haven't got a signal from the board yet. So until I get a signal from the board to see what's going on with George in Miami.
Sorry, man, I'm here.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Dev, you have to turn your radio off. Okay, good.
Sure did. Sorry about the feedback.
Go ahead, man.
Well, like I said, it's a pleasure talking to you, Mike, and indeed, you're like an urban legend out here, which is why I was wondering what your take was on why is it that you think there's such a contrast in like the political denial between the East Coast and the West Coast when it comes to like the subject of collapse.
I don't know that there's a great difference between left and right coast. There is definitely a difference between class, if you will, and mindset. I haven't been traveling lately, but I've done a lot of traveling, and I'm in touch with people all over the country. There are people who are just totally in denial everywhere. It's like I'm here in West Sonoma County, which is one of the hotbeds in the world of preparation for collapse. You have Post Carbon Institute, Transition U.S., Occidental Arts and Ecology, some of the best permaculture stuff in the world. All this heavy activity, and yet when I went to speak at this Rotary Club, it was like a whole room of people who didn't even had one person had heard of permaculture. You know, so I'm not sure it's left coast, right coast. I really do think it's the frequency of people and their ability or willingness to hear. Are you experiencing something that's different between one coast and the other?
It seems that. I haven't been out to the West much, other than just passing through on my way to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like the philosophical differences are I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like there's a big difference. Indeed, in fact, I had heard about you like 20 years ago or maybe even more as like an urban legend, as it turns out decades later, you are a real person and actually exist.
Yeah, I do.
so that in itself, it's like, wow. The reason why I bring it up is because it seems like the media doesn't keep up with what actually is going on. They seem to distract everybody with things.
Well, in his last show, or the show that preceded mine tonight, Gary Null was very clear, and I'm very aware of this too, is that mainstream media's listeners are falling off a cliff. Their numbers are just diving because all they're spewing now is absolute nonsense. And,
indeed.
People who had formerly been sheep are even kind of noticing this is all bullshit, pardon my French, and they're running away in droves, and that's a sign of a changing consciousness. But what I have been real clear on, especially over the last 2-3 months, which is was pivotal in a lot of my decision making, is that those people who do and think that way, the media outlets, they're not going to change. All they're going to do is get more egregious at what they do. They're going to lie harder, they're going to lie bigger, they're going to lie faster, they're going to commit more, and they're going to get continually more ridiculous.
Indeed, touche, but the thing about it is that, like for example, I came across a video, you had a lecture you did on YouTube a number of years ago, and you're touching off on subjects that now, 2011, 2012, actually turned out to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
wow.
And it's not just me. I mean, especially now I'm becoming more and more aware of all of the great minds who have been warning with every fiber in their being that all of this was going to come crashing down, whether from an energy standpoint, an economic standpoint, a moral standpoint, whatever. And all of those voices need to be heard or need to be recognized, but it's not as if, that's the big message that I got with all of this recently. It was like Spirit saying to me, okay, they've had all the warning they're going to get. That's it. You're not obligated to hold the lantern at the crossroads anymore. Now, pull back into your own lifeboat and start living there, because that's where you're going to survive, and that's also where you get to live more in a healthier consciousness, one that doesn't drain your energy.
Anyway, George, thank you so very much for calling in.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure, Mike. Thank you. Keep up the good work, man.
Okay. I did notice one story tonight. There's the radio again. I did notice one story tonight that's going to be on the World News Desk tomorrow, that Saudi Arabia and Bahrain are contemplating a union joining. In other words, Saudi Arabia would absorb Bahrain. That raises some big, big issues in the Middle East. And I will stress and repeat again that the attack on Iran is off. It's not going to happen. It's done. Iran won that one. But there remains an enormous amount of tension between the Shia Muslims in Iran and the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia. Bahrain is on borders Saudi Arabia on the east, juts out onto the peninsula there. And almost all of Saudi Arabia's oil is in the far eastern part of the country in predominantly Shia regions. Bahrain has a predominantly Shia population, and the annexation of Bahrain would, in effect, be Saudi Arabia moving to imprison the Shia populations of the region, and I'm certain that there is going to be a strong backlash with that from Iran. So instability remains increasing everywhere around the world. And the South China Sea all they can do is make the wrong decisions, and trust me, that's all that's being done. That's all I can see. I am kind of amazed as I look at the situation around the world this week, at how quickly violence is escalating in a great many countries, riots in many countries, and how quickly the economic situation is deteriorating. I can do a minute or two on Europe here, and it might be worthwhile to do that. Greece is on the verge of becoming a fascist dictatorship. We've had stories this week that people have actually seen the Sieg Heil salute in Greece. They have not formed a government, and it's all contingent on the debt mess. And in the meantime, the rest of Europe is just going down the toilet. Greece is moving out of the EU. Apparently, the move to start printing the drachma is underway. German banking houses are planning on how to recalibrate based upon a Greek pullout from the euro and a new currency, which is exactly what I and a great many people said last August when this current round of financial turmoil broke out. That was following the disastrous quarter post-Fukushima as supply chains were disrupted around the world. We call that, right? But everybody said, I mean, zero. It was Financial Sense, Mish. Everybody was saying in August, the EU is dead, period. Greece will leave the EU, and here we are, and yes, of course, it's happened, or it is happening, and China has stopped buying European debt. Now, to me, that was one of the most significant stories of all, because this whole global Ponzi scheme, this infinite growth Ponzi scheme, is all based upon people buying debt, and when people stop buying debt, that's when the House of Cards comes down. Oh, speaking of House of Cards, here's some good news for you guys. I got an email this week from New Society, which is the publisher of Crossing the Rubicon. So I just got some reports this week. It's still in Barnes & Noble's after 8 years, and I think that's terrific. But the email said that Kevin Spacey, the actor, really good actor, has got a new series called House of Cards, which is a Netflix series. I guess that's kind of a new way of doing series. HBO and Showtime did it, but now Netflix is going straight to, wow. But it's going to be a big series. Kevin Spacey's a big name, House of Cards. And they said, in every episode, there's going to be several scenes in the main office of the head dude. And sitting on the desk of the head dude in the head dude's office is going to be a copy of Crossing the Rubicon. Two or three times a show all throughout the series. I said, wow. See if you can get me a cameo there. That'd be fun. So that's, a lot of people waking up very, very, very fast, and it's good to see that, because again, I come back to this point that we won't be able to deal with this until we deal with it in ways outside of the empirical, because empirically we're screwed. And that doesn't mean that there's no answer, but we have to come to a point where we realize that Fukushima is not a Japanese problem; it's a human problem. That climate change is a human problem; it affects everything and everyone. That all of these are problems that we share now as human beings collectively, because as the noose gets tighter, the noose of collapse gets tighter around the neck of industrial civilization. There's going to be fewer and fewer options available, but as it gets tighter, we will also be approaching the point of being beaten into a state of reasonableness, and I can't stress how important that is. I've discussed many times, and I have a feeling this is going to be a significant part of the book that I'm going to write, but I spent 21 years in 12-step recovery, and there's some powerful lessons there for society as a whole. But the first and most important ingredient in all of 12-step recovery is complete deflation, is complete defeat. Surrender is a state of hopelessness. And the essence of any 12-step program is that the addict, the alcoholic, whatever the condition is, will keep doing that, sometimes even until death. But when he reaches a point, he or she reaches a point where there's nobody left to blame, where there's no place left to point the finger, where there is no other excuse or option, there's a great line in the Big Book that says, when we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could neither postpone nor evade. Sound familiar? We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. He either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And that's the point from which miracles start to happen and can happen. It was generally conceded that before 1933, when AA was started, by medical science, by psychiatry, by psychologists, by all of the ones and zero guys, that alcoholics were beyond human aid, could not be helped. They were going to drink themselves to death, crash the car. I have seen alcoholics in beds dying with a liver the size of a suitcase, orange, and saying they don't have a drinking problem. That's a form of that's the disease. And once you get to that point, you either see or you don't. And you have to get used to the fact that some get it and some don't. But the fact remains that once that came along, that spiritual approach, millions of people were able to overcome a hopeless state of mind and body. So there's something there. And I guess it's that something that has been driving me crazy, because if you just look at the work of Michael C. Rupert over the course of, two books, From the Wilderness to Movies, blah, 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 that was all presented to you from a left-brain, footnoted journalist standpoint. And yet I realize that that's not the whole story. And you won't have the whole story unless you hear all the other ingredients that went into the soup, because I have no doubt that for whatever reason I was led on this path in life. I didn't really have a choice. And now that I have been relieved of that duty that I carried for so long to warn and to document, I look back and I say, well, what would I want to say now as all this stuff comes to pass? And longtime followers will know that I've always talked about the map. I said that from the wilderness we were making a map of how the world worked. In Rubicon, I said we were making a map of how the world worked and where it was going. And used that analogy for a great many years. But here's the truth, guys. We've reached the ends of the map that I drew. And in almost every case, it's the worst-case scenario that I painted in crossing the Rubicon. We continue to make all the wrong decisions. But the point is that everything everywhere is about to enter unfathomably uncharted territory. We haven't even got a clue. There are always ways that I want to approach that, and I would like to approach that trimmed, if you will, like a sailboat or an airplane. I want to approach that alone, more or less, so that I can report on what I see, because we're all going out there to one degree or another soon enough. And now I'm really feeling at ease with it all. A peaceful, easy feeling, which is good. It's the way I feel inside, the way you feel inside, the way all of us feel as we look at this world that's falling apart. We have to walk an edge, that's my belief, between you can't just turn it all off. You can't just pretend it's not there. Because then you're disconnecting from the reality. So you have to bear witness. But on the other hand, I guess if I were to simplify that, I would have to say you need to be in the world but not of it. And that's the way to move as freely as possible. And it's my real hope for everybody out there that you really are taking this time, these weeks and months in May and June and July, to tighten your relationships within your lifeboat, to tighten relationships within your community, to, you know, just do something nice for a neighbor, do something nice for yourself, and weave those bonds tighter locally with those around you that you're going to ride this out with. And it's not a bad place to be. It's not a bad place to be at all. I mean, like, I could wake up tomorrow, and I expect within a very few days, weeks, you know, they will finally say officially that the EU is dead. We're going to see NATO and the G8 is coming up. And I'm just standing back now, and because we know how that's going to play. I don't think it can be stopped at all, and I don't think there's any point in trying. Ron Paul is still out there now. Ron Paul does stand a chance of pulling a rabbit out of a hat at the Republican convention. And I still strongly support his candidacy. He has been consistent, and I do trust that he has a very wise and evil strategy out there that he's going to play. But I am philosophic about how that's going to play. A Ron Paul presidency would be a great victory for us in terms of liberating all of us to prepare and starting to reallocate resources on a much more reasonable basis and starting to kill that corrupt beast in Washington. But even if it's Romney, I'm still philosophic about the whole thing at this point. The lantern is in. I mean, and I do feel an enormous amount of relief with that. I'm also going to be freer, I think, and this is why I'm looking forward to going down to do Joe Rogan. Because, Joe, we just have a great conversation. We've been emailing a lot, and in that conversation, tons are revealed. I go into a conversation with Joe Rogan, like, paying attention and taking notes. Maybe I'd ask him to be a guest on this show. I think he'd probably do it. But I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that, because more of my next direction will come. But all things considered, I think it's reasonable to announce that I have officially started work on my third book, which is going to be not really a memoir. I'm going to include the parts of the story that work for the bigger message. I don't feel the need or the urge to go back and relive all the really ugly stuff I've been through in my life. What's the point? Why would you want to go back and write that all down over again? No. What you talk about has got to be... should serve the story, but I think that's the only way that I can, in a third book, a trilogy of my life, really complete the whole story that I began with Rubicon and confronting collapse, because that's just looking at it from a two-dimensional standpoint, and there's much bigger dimensions to what I've learned along the way and how that might be helpful to you and everybody else. And Roger Waters and the Wall, now that was so good. There might be some music coming back up too, and all these things are extremely important, so if you hear me doing this, maybe take that as a lead to allow yourself some time too to connect with your artsy side, with your creative side. This is the time of year to get out back outside and ground, and look to your homes. Take care of your homes and take care of the people around you. Just got an email, and I wonder if it's, hold on a second, there might be some story here, a good one. Okay, this came out as a flash, so I decided to take a look at it. But it's sorry, it's nothing. God, patients are being treated in the corridors. Claims the Royal College of Nursing. Patients are being left stranded on trolleys for hours and forced to have treatment in corridors due to the loss of hospital beds. And 30,000 police marched through London to protest cuts today. Gee, all things considered, gratitude is also exceptionally important wherever you are. Sit down and make a list of all the things that you have to be grateful for, and that also puts you in a right mind. Anti-government patriot groups propagating at an alarming rate. Well, this is something else that I see is a major flaw of the mainstream media. This is from Digital Journal, actually, but those epithets and that horrible emotional spin that used to be used for, you know, a patriot or he's a militia, all of that's kind of wearing thin now, because what do you mean anti-government patriot groups? Do you mean groups that would like their constitution back? Groups that protest criminal activity? But again, of course, that's the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's what you would expect from them. But, you know, I don't think that's flying, because when I stood in the at the Rotary meeting and I did not pledge allegiance to the flag, my hand didn't go up. A bunch of people looked, but I don't think anybody had any doubt as to why I wasn't doing it. And that's a lesson, too, for all of us, in that now it's time maybe to quietly speak your truth and realize that we are not so alone anymore. There's a great many of us out here who thoroughly understand what's underway. And it is, at one and the same time, the collapse of human industrial civilization and a magnificent change in human consciousness. And that's where I'm going to be living for a while to get some balance back. And I've got a feeling over the next couple of weeks there's going to be some clear directions emerging for where we go with this show. I'm going to be with you here forever. I have some guest requests out, but it looks like most of the people in our little cadre and circle who are moving around are all in transit this week. So maybe this was a week of shaking out across the board. All I know is I feel a lot better tonight. I feel more relieved, and I'm much more optimistic. Why? I cannot measure it against events in the outside world. But heaven and hell do exist on the same street corner, and changing consciousness rather than the outside world is often more effective than anything else you can do. It's like I learned a long time ago, you will never achieve inner peace by trying to arrange things outside of yourself. And I'm nice. It's really incredible to feel centered tonight. We're going to row out from there into the world. I don't know what else to say. We've got nobody else to call in, and I am not one to extend the show and try to talk too long when I don't have much else to say. But I hope you hear in my voice tonight the calm and the relaxation, and I feel very good, and I feel there's a lot more that we can and that we will do to make our lifeboats better and to move us closer to the 100th monkey. That being said, I'm going to go start to pack a little early. I'm going to drive down to L.A. tomorrow. I'll see you on Joe Rogan on Thursday, and maybe we'll have Joe on the show sometime soon as our own guest. This is Mike Rupert on PRN-FM with the Lifeboat Hour. We'll see you next week.